I'm going to be talking about host-proof applications. And this is an application design, which is illustrated on this slide, which aims to protect users from attacks on servers that host their contents using encryption. So the basic idea is very simple. You have a client application, and this client application uses a remote server on the cloud, or cloud storage services like Dropbox to store encrypted data. And every operation is done on the client, except for the backup, which allows to, for instance, share the encrypted data across every user's device. So the main protection of this design is that it allows the content server to be compromised without leaking any sensitive data, because you have to force the encryption of every user's file if you want to recover the plain text. So is it as simple as it sounds? Well, it turns out that when you take the journal design, it may sound simple, but what the vendors are actually trying to do is provide host-proof web applications. And this is where the problems begin. So there, we have identified different kind of web patterns for the host-proof applications. So our two main examples are cloud file storage services and password managers. So for the first one, cloud storage, you have a content server, which is used for storing the encrypted files. And you have the application website, which can be used as an interface for accessing your encrypted files and actually downloading the files on your client, or in this case, a browser, and downloading the decrypted files. And of course, when you introduce this kind of design, you're going to be vulnerable to web attacks. And in these cases, the web attacks can target the application websites, where you can have code injection in the encrypted content via XSS and cross-script request forgery. So an attacker, for instance, so you can see that this design introduced new problems in the sense that it is the content server, which is in most cases used to send the decryption scripts. And if you have tampering on the server, you could have also tampering of the decryption scripts to leak back the decrypted data and leak back the encryption keys to the attacker. So this is why there's a fundamental difference between the general host-proof design and when you try to apply it to web applications. So another problem is that every of the services that we reviewed implemented some kind of sharing. And the sharing mechanism always introduced new problems, because there are different ways you're going to do that, either using key management techniques or by sharing the decryption keys, or many different kind of methods. And the next pattern we identified was password managers, which are getting quite popular at this time. And the most common design is for desktop. You have a browser extension, which is in charge of logging you into the website you are browsing using the extension. So you register on the application server here, and you log in on your extension password manager. And this is where the decryption of your password files is done. And when you want to log in on an host page, the extension tries to read the URL of that page and release the password to the login form to log you in. But of course, it can become even more complicated in the cases where you have a roaming password manager, because there are no browser extensions in mobile devices. And that means that you have to actually use ancient techniques like bookmarklets, which are snippets of code that you run into the scope of the host page. And in this kind of design, you have a shared secret between the application server and the bookmarklet. And once you have created a station with a content server, you're going to ask your bookmarklet to log you into the website. And the website using the station is going to download the encrypted files containing your passwords and actually do the decryption, and using the URL of the page, release the password to log you in. And the problem comes from the fact that this is done in the same JavaScript scope. Okay, so we identify many things that can go wrong in this kind of designs. And first of all, you can have problems with the actual use of encryption and the sharing of ciphertext. You can also have problems with the way in which you authorize a release of plain text. And you have major problems with key management because everything wants to implement sharing. And you have also the classical programming errors, which can be quite dramatic when you have a password manager because those are extremely sensitive data, right? So if you look at the way the crypto is used, you can see that most of the application use standard primitives. And it's actually a problem because they use the primitives. So they build their encryption schemes around PKDF2 for the derivation of key from passwords, and SHA-256 for hashing, AES for symmetric encryption, and RSA for public key encryption. And so there can be problems already at the key derivation stage, a problem which is dealt with in the outcomes of technical report, where they reviewed actually password manager on mobile phones as apps. And they found that the key derivation was terrible in most cases and many problems. But for this kind of applications, they're actually way more serious because they're a commercial application in wide use. But there can still be very big problems. And if you look at these tables, there's very striking one here is the fact that you have records which are not integrity protected and with no encryption protection on the metadata. So from an old wisdom, Stephen Belovno, so you know that if you use encryption with integrity protection, then it is going to, every case, cause problems. And we found these kind of problems in OnePassword and RoboFarm, which are both password managers. And if you look at the way they store their records, they do not encrypt the URL because you want to have indexing and so some metadata are not encrypted, like the title of the page. But of course, if you do not have integrity to associate this URL to the username and password, what is going to happen is that you can have tampering on the encrypted data, which is going to allow attacks. And in this scheme, when you have the hypothesis of a compromised server, which is the attacker model that the Hostproof design tries to defend against, if you can tamper the encrypted records using just changing the URL of encrypted data, then you can have the user inadvertently leaks his password to the wrong website. And this can be further amplified by the fact that you have sharing features, which means that you could be sharing over insecure networks and have an attacker which would be tampering the file you're trying to share, just an encrypted file, and have the client released to the wrong website, for instance, his Google password. So here's another problem of in the browser extension model of password managers. So you have to identify the URL of the website for which you have to release your password. And most of the browser extension are doing regular expression matching. And here is one example of such regular expression from the very popular Perse URI library. So if you look at that, I don't know if you can't, if you're able to tell if this is a correct regular expression. If you have some background in computer language, you know that the description in the RFC is using a context-free language. So probably there's going to be some problem. And indeed, there is a problem in the way that you can actually still, in the latest parse URI version, test this URL and see that it's parsed incorrectly, recognizing the bad .com. It's actually parses this as a host instead of bad.com. And using this kind of problems, here is actually the code used for a one password host matching. And you see that it uses simple regex to stop at the first slash in the URL to extract the host name. And of course, using that, you can build a phishing URL, which would be parsed incorrectly by the browser extension. And when you try to log in on the website, it's going to release the password for the wrong websites, which is, of course, a huge problem. So this is the way the password manager are being used. In an extension, you click on the button and click the log me in button. And you can even have settings that will log you in automatically without any question asked. So these kind of phishing attacks where you have the fake phishing URL sent by the attacker by a redirection of some kind, and is going to get the extension to release your Google password or something. Okay, so then you have also the usual range of web attacks due to the fact that you're exposing your web login page and associated web interface problems. So it's hard to maintain the client-side decryption, of course, due to the JavaScript limitation, which is you are forced to have a mixed code with data. And this is what we saw in many of the website's interfaces. And you have a login form exposed to web attacks, and decryption is a safe scope of GUI and user data. So this is what actually happened on a cloud file storage manager, which is called SpiderRock. So SpiderRock has many different security problems. One of which is that its website actually is not really host-proof because it actually sends a decryption key to the server, which is stored temporarily for the station, and the decryption is actually done server-side. But even assuming that it was correct, it is also vulnerable to CSRF attacks. And because it's using Ajax interface, which uses JSON for loading the list of devices and directories and files, there is absolutely no CSRF protection against these features. And this means that as long as you have a session open with those websites, an attacker is able to use the session because in addition to the fact that it has no CSRF protection, it also has JSONP enabled. And JSONP, as you know, is a very bad thing. It allows you to set a callback function on the JSON results. And the result allows you to actually perform cross-origin queries. And using this, you can simply steal the directory listings and file listing in the user accounts. But even worse, the SpiderRock sharing feature actually stores the share keys inside the JSON results. So you see that in that case, you have a very basic CSRF attack, which is escalated to a dramatic security breach because you are going to leak your share keys, which allow you to download every encrypted file in your accounts in the share rooms. So this is a key management problem. And this key management problem is very frequent in host-proof applications. Because, as I said, they all want to implement some form of sharing, and you have to decide on a key policy for doing that. So you could be deciding to re-encrypt using a new share key, which would be public, have a key hierarchy to be able to publish some keys without making others public, or you can have many different kind of share patterns. But one of the big problems is that if you make a mistake in your initial design, then it's going to be extremely difficult to fix the problem afterwards. And in the case, So here is an example of LastPass, which also suffers from a key management problem. But it's also an example of a roaming password manager. So the way this is used is that you have a bookmarklet here. And when you're on any website, you click on this bookmarklet. And it's going to create an iframe with the LastPass origin. And this iframe is able to download your encrypted password database and release to the page the password for that page. And you have to see that there are problems with its design, because this bookmarklet is actually in the same scope as the attacker. So first of all, you have a secret inside the bookmarklet, which is used to identify the user intention. But that secret is shared with the server. And the way this bookmarklet is working is that you create a master key for the LastPass. And this master key is temporarily stored on the LastPass server. And when you get the user intention to log in on, for instance, the attacker website, he's going to click on his bookmarklet. And the bookmarklet, using the session with the server, is going to download the encrypted key here, which is used to encrypt the password database, along with some. So this key is going to be encrypted into a random parameter plus the secret shared between the bookmarklet and server. And of course, RR, the random parts, is also sent along, which means that since here you are in the same scope of the attacker, you can have a rootkit attack. And by rootkit attack, we mean that the attacker may have poisoned some of the JavaScript prototype for objects, strings, and this kind of stuff to actually recover S at the time the bookmarklet is clicked and perform the decryption itself to recover key. And in that case, once again, you have an attack which is really very much amplified by the fact that you have the actual master key for the password database, which is loaded inside the scope of the attacker here. And this key is not specific to this website, which means that once you recover it, you're able to decrypt every user's password, which breaks the initial host-proof design again. So here's a small example of what the function used to perform the attack looks like. So this is the function contained inside the bookmarklet, and you're able to redefine some of the global variables used by this function and recall this function once it's defined in the scope to recover here the encrypted from data, but you don't really care about that because it's specific to the page, but more importantly, the encrypted key, which you can decrypt using these parameters here. Okay. So what is the ultimate point of our research? First of all, there is some kind of debate going on about the real usefulness of having a JavaScript crypto. And some of the arguments made by the Montesano security group are actually quite interesting, because they say that you have a chicken egg problem on the delivery, on the secure delivery of JavaScript to the browser. And indeed, if you have the same host that is used for sending encrypted data and the decryption script, of course it's not enough to have to enforce the host-proof application design, because you could be tampering with the decryption script if you cannot decrypt the data and recover the keys. So one other point is that browser JavaScript is also tied to cryptography. And this is really something that seems to be changing. For instance, we have a W3C working group on the web crypto API, which is going to, we hope, allow application designers to avoid some of the mistakes they made in the key management and use of the crypto primitives. And finally, there's the view source transparency of JavaScript. So what they mean by that is that you don't really have any formal method for analyzing JavaScript code. And once again, we disagree with this statement. So as part of this research, we designed a type system and a JavaScript subset, which is used to be intended to be used in a rootkitted environment. So this is actually an interesting research into JavaScript, because most of the security research assumes that you are running first, that you are the good page, and you're trying to defend against loaded scripts. But in some cases, it is desirable to investigate the security when you load trusted script into a hostile environment. And so what are our current available tools for building good application? We have the origin HTTP header for protecting against CSRF. We have access control allow origin to be able to make necessary cross-origin requests without using bad stuff like JSONP. And we have a content security policy to defend against XSS. And on the client side, we have a very good browser extension sandboxing, which is used to be actually able to perform JavaScript crypto in a safe manner. We have the new Web Crypto API. Like I said, it allows you to avoid making mistakes in the use of crypto. You have new tools in the ECMAS 6. And you have HTML5 RAM sandboxing and the local storage if you want to have a stateful application to have a good crypto. So the ultimate conclusion of our work is that there is actually a need for providing good automated formal analysis methods. And our point is that in the last 2 to 3 years, we have seen the development of new formal methods. So by co-author the Web SPI module for providing a formal model of the browser for performing cryptographic protocol verification in ProVerif. A formal model of JavaScript security. So here I'm thinking about the allow model here, which was presented in this CSF 2010 paper, as well as various kind of JS subset, like the one we're studying, the AdSafe, and many others. And finally, information flow analysis tools like GIF, which is very old, but not really being used by the application vendors. And JS Flow, which is specific to JavaScript and used to have a flow analysis, and some others which are designed to build actual applications. So I think one of the goals that we have to reach for the next years is to be able to provide these formal analysis methods to the person who are actually building the commercial application, to avoid them being a bad mistake, which were demonstrated in this presentation. Thank you, and we are available for questions and offline discussion.
I was curious about the opening of your presentation where you say that formal models are actually being created for the web. So how do those formal models deal with dynamic content generation and you know, things like eval?
So generally speaking, most of the formal methods, they implicitly assume that you are not going to use some of the very bad features, and eval is a prime example of that. So the current trend is that for the full JavaScript runtime is very dynamic, and because of that, you cannot perform a very meaningful formal analysis on the full JavaScript language. And one of the big trend in the past year has been to reduce the JavaScript language towards smaller subsets, which are much more easy to deal with on a formal basis. And one example of that, of course, is AdSafe, which is a subset which all gives you safety properties when you load untrusted script into a trusted environment. And these properties are actually enforced by automated systems. So this is a good example of the security goals that we want to achieve using formal methods.
Okay, thank you.